next to the truth and fact of knowing that you have been redeemed by the matchless grace of God, that you've been saved by faith in the crucified and resurrected Son of God, that your name is written in heaven, next to that glorious truth, there's no news that has ever been given to the human race than is more wonderful than the statement we have tonight. We shall not all die. 1 Corinthians 15:51. Behold, I show you a secret. Now the risen Lord first showed that secret to Paul, for he said, I delivered unto you that also which I received of the Lord. And it was God's secret made known to us and to others through the Apostle Paul. Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all die, but we shall all be changed. I told you about the young man who could not get victory over a certain habit. And he went in the conference with his preacher, and he said to him, Preacher, I'm a believer. Do you think that a person who smokes cigarettes can get to heaven? Why, he said, certainly that's entirely possible and more than possible. And if you keep on smoking like you're smoking now, the chances are you'll get there 10 years ahead of time. Are you going to heaven ahead of time or just on time? Have you decided yet? Are you going there ahead of time? Do you think some people die ahead of time or right on time? Perhaps you heard about the colored preacher. One of his members came to him and he says, I read several times here about the quick and the dead. He said, what does that mean? Well, he says, you go down on the outer drive and you try to pass in the traffic, and if you're not quick, you'll be dead. Now, we read at the end of the Labor Day that weekend, 600 people died by accident. Traffic, drowning, and other deaths. If they had not been in the traffic, would they be alive today? They're dead. Right after that, we read about one of those female cyclones, and 150 people died. Another one came along and 40 people died. And then the next time, about 25 died. And the other day in Tampico, we're told that already they have found 850 bodies that died in the tornado or the cyclone there that hit the coast of Mexico. Now, we read last week about 150 people were killed in the revolution down in Argentina. There are many different ways of dying. We had a man here. He used to be with the Capone gang, some of them, and he was gloriously saved. He had a weakness. That weakness was drink. And for about 5 or 6 years, he got victory over that habit. He became very much discouraged. He would come and weep on my shoulder, and he loved the Lord, but that weakness in his trouble, he turned back to the drink. And he went on a drunk, and he stayed that way for 7 weeks until he committed suicide by drinking. He died because of drink. He drank himself to death. There are thousands and thousands of people in Chicago and hundreds walking up and down this street that are going to die before their time because of drink. As far as Christians are concerned, if we really let Romans 8:28 grip us and obey it, all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to His purpose. We can really say with Spurgeon, not one shaft nor plague can hit until the God of love sees fit. The chances are, 1 year from tonight, if we would attempt to gather this same congregation, somebody will have gone by the way of death. We have about the lowest mortality rate, I think, of any assembly that I know of. I've been here 32 years. And I've listed every person that's died here as a member, and as far as I know, only 48 people have died in 32 years. That's not a very heavy mortality rate for a company of people this size. Now, we have a great many schemes today to prolong life. You've heard the adjectives that are being used in our scientific discoveries and cures today. They speak of them as being marvelous. They have a new word now. They're working overtime. It's fabulous. Do you hear that very much? Fabulous, like some of these cosmetics the women get. They're just fabulous. And they have to be fabulous to do some of the work they're called upon to do. Well, then they say they're incredible. They have cures now for mental disease and heart disease and polio and cancer and all these different diseases. And yet, people are dying of all these diseases every day and every hour. Now, just remember, our own country here, every 24 hours, at least 2,400 people die in the United States. In addition to all of these scientific discoveries and cures, we have more religious cures today for disease than ever known. We have the metaphysical religions, the mind religions, and the secret of new thought and unity and Christian Science is to know the difference between M-I-N-D with small letters and M-I-N-D with capital letters. The true man, they tell us, is mine, and mine is incapable of sin, sickness, and death. About 30 years ago, I heard the most eloquent orator that the Christian Scientist had, and he asked this question. A very interesting question. He said, has medical science ever effected a permanent cure? And the no's were, the heads were being shaken in the negative all over the auditorium. I want you to think of it. A permanent cure. Has anyone ever found a permanent cure for sickness? Two men in the Old Testament found a permanent cure. Enoch walked with God, and Enoch was not, for God took him. So he didn't have to die because of sickness. Elijah, you remember, was taken up, body, soul, and spirit, and Elijah did not die. But just remember this. As we said this morning, according to the figures given to us by some who claim to be experts, 18 billion people have died since Adam left the Garden of Eden. With the exception of Enoch and Elijah, none of them found a permanent cure. Mrs. Eddy sinned, Mrs. Eddy died, and Mrs. Eddy was sick. And the worst awaits her yet. Because it's appointed unto men once to die, and after this the judgment, if you do not come by faith to Calvary, where Christ said, now is the judgment of this world. In the second chapter of Kings, David calls Solomon and all of his friends. The Lord said, it's time for you to go now, David. So David called all around, and he said in 1 Kings 2, I go the way of all the earth. He wasn't the first man that said that. Joshua said that. Remember what Joshua said in the 23rd chapter? Listen what he said. And behold, this day I am going the way of all the earth. And ye know in all your hearts and in all your souls that not one thing hath failed of all the good things which the Lord your God spake concerning you. All have come to pass unto you, and not one thing hath failed thereof. Therefore it shall come to pass, if you continue to live like you've lived under my judgeship, you'll continue to have God's blessing, but if you depart, great trouble will come upon you. Our converted Jewish friend this afternoon referred to this, and he told of the trouble that has come upon the Jews all during the centuries past. And up to the present time, when God told them when they were scattered among the Gentiles and that they would be punished, God says that then Gentiles shall call you a Sheninah or a Sheni. Whenever you hear a Jew called a Sheni, not so many of them today as they used to call them, that's in fulfillment of prophecy way back in the book of Deuteronomy. Now, they didn't walk in the ways of the Lord. You remember the story. After Solomon died, Jeroboam and Rehoboam divided the kingdom. And there were several hundred years of the successes of Jeroboam over the 10 tribes. And Jeroboam is mentioned about 25 times as that man who caused Israel to sin. How would you like to have that record left behind? Jeremiah, who caused Israel to sin. That's his title. And every single king, without a single exception, who followed Jeremiah, walked in the steps of Jeremiah, who caused Israel to sin. So God says, I will remove Israel out of my sight. And he preserved the two tribes, Judah and Benjamin. Now God had about five good kings. Josiah was a good king, comparatively speaking. And one of the good kings was Hezekiah. And let me read to you about Hezekiah. We read about Hezekiah here in the 2 Kings 20. First verse, in those days was Hezekiah sick unto death. And the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amos, came to him and said unto him, thus saith the Lord, set thine house in order, for thou shalt die and not live. Now if he had just said, well, the will of the Lord be done, I'd want to be in the Lord's will, and if he wants me to go, I'll go. When the Lord told the Apostle Paul the time of his departure was at hand, he says, I have fought a good fight. I'm ready. And when the Lord told Peter that he was going, he said, shortly I must put off this tabernacle. He didn't ask for any additional days. There's a man came to me here the other day. The wife of a certain preacher died of cancer. And that man said to me, he says, well, That's what he gets for being out of the will of God. The Lord's killing his wife. Well, that poor woman has been sick with a cancer for over 15 years. You be very careful about telling the Lord what he's doing about taking saints away. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. Well, Oral Roberts and some of the healers tell you, you're not living right. That's the reason you're sick. And you may be sick today and cured, and tomorrow an automobile may run over you. And one thing is sure. When this man asked the question, is there any permanent cure? Has medical science ever effected a permanent cure? Certainly not. The death rate of the human race is one apiece. You can't have it any higher than that. And there'll be no one, as far as the Bible is concerned, who will experience what Enoch and Elijah experienced, not one in this age of grace. But they did not live in an age when they could say, behold, I show you a mystery, we shall not all die. They lived in an age when all had to die because a great event had to take place before we could say we shall not all die. You remember what David said after he said, I go the way of all the earth? He said, I shall be satisfied when I awake with his likeness. And when he said, I shall be satisfied when I behold him in righteousness and shall awake with his righteousness, he said, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. But a great event had not taken place. You see, there are two great events. One is mentioned in Hebrews 2, 14 and 15. Now notice, it says Jesus Christ became a partaker of flesh and blood that he might through death destroy him that had the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. When Jesus Christ died, he said, I have power to lay down my life. I have power to take it up again. Therefore, I am the resurrection and the life. And we're told in 2 Timothy 1:10 that he hath abolished death and he hath brought life and incorruptibility to light through the gospel. We're told in the second chapter of Colossians that he spoiled principalities and powers. He made a show of them openly, triumphing over them in it. Going through the citadel of Satan in the heavenlies and sitting down at the right hand of God. And after he was raised from the dead, you remember the messenger of the Lord said, why seek ye the living among the dead? He's not here, he's risen. And when he met John on the Isle of Patmos, he said, I am he that was dead, and I'm alive forevermore, and I have the keys of death and Hades. And when he let Lazarus die, in the 11th chapter of John, he stayed in Perea so Lazarus could die for the glory of God. And he came back, and the sister said, if thou hast been here, my brother would not have died, but whatsoever you ask the Father, he'll give it to you now. And he said, your brother shall rise again. She said, yes, he'll rise again on the resurrection day. And Jesus Christ said to Mary and Martha, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth on me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Well, Christ had to abolish death. He had to destroy Satan's death power. Until that time, just one trophy was taken from death. And that was Moses. You remember Moses died. He looked over into the promised land, but at Nebo, Mount Pisgah, his body was buried. God took his body and buried it. And you remember what happened? Satan went to the archangel. And he said to Michael, I want that body of Moses. I want that body of Moses. The seed of the woman has not yet come to bruise my head. Nobody has died and conquered death. Enoch and Elijah went home without dying. But here's the first man and his body was taken. And Michael said to Satan, the Lord rebuke thee. But he wanted that body. And no one could say the other side of the cross, "Behold, I show you a mystery, we shall not all die." Back there, everyone had to say with Joshua and David, "I go the way of all the earth." Now, Hezekiah was going the way of all the earth, and notice what happened. "I beseech thee, O Lord, remember now I have walked before thee in truth and with a perfect heart, and have done that which is good in thy sight." And Hezekiah wept sore. And it came to pass, now notice, that God sent to Hezekiah, "I have heard thy prayer, I have seen thy tears. Behold, I will heal thee. On the third day thou shalt go up into the house, and I will add unto thy days 15 years. Well, doesn't that seem wonderful? Well, notice what happened. It says, "The rest of the acts of Hezekiah and all his might, how he made a pool and conduit and brought water into the city, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? And Hezekiah slept with his father, and Manasseh his son reigned in his stead." Manasseh was 12 years old when he began to reign. That's 3 years after Hezekiah's life was spared. And he reigned 55 years. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, after the abominations of the heathen. I don't accept Hitler or Mussolini or Stalin or Nero or any other king. Manasseh was the most wicked man that ever reigned on this earth. And Manasseh would never have been born if Hezekiah hadn't asked for additional 15 years. Beloved, I can go back. I'm not judging men in the sense, but I could go back and tell you of 100 men that I've known who would have been far better off if they'd died 10 or 15 years before they died. They had come to a certain place where God had blessed them in the last days of their life. They became a disgrace to the Lord. You be very careful about asking for this and that. Of course, we love life. A man said to me, he lived on Long Island. He said, "I lived next to a man that was always saying, 'I want to die, I want to die.' He said, 'God deliver me from ever having such a neighbor again.'" Anybody that wants to die, if they're rational, there's something wrong with them. They're not good companions, unless they're in absolute pain. Now let me tell you another man whose life was spared for the glory of God, and you find that in the second chapter of Philippians. And in these two men, you get the answer to all the healing delusions of this day in which we live. Here is the only pattern of healing that we have in the Bible for today. There is no such thing as miracle sign healing today. Miracle sign healing ceased with the apostles. A man told me this afternoon that a friend had just returned from Texas, and about 20 preachers got Oral Roberts in a room and said, "We'll give you $1,000 to heal one sick person in this town and prove it. Just heal one sick person and prove it." And he didn't want the $1,000. When Mrs. McPherson was in Denver claiming all the healing, Mr. Fowler wouldn't go into the meeting. He was condemned for it. And in the hospital where our president is tonight, there were 2,400 people sick, some of them without limbs, some without eyes, some without different members of their anatomy. Mr. Fowler said, "Have Mrs. McPherson go down there and spend 3 hours this afternoon. If she heals anybody, I'll join the meeting." Well, somebody told her about it. She went through and she says, "God bless you, God bless you, God bless you," and went through, because she went through and everybody was just as sick when she left as when she went in there. Now here is the only healing pattern that you have in the Bible, that of Epaphroditus for the same.
The last sign healing that the Apostle Paul ever did was on the isle that now is under the control of Great Britain, known as the Isle of Malta. Right after the shipwreck, when 276 people were rescued on pieces of that boat, there was a company of heathen there, Publius, the chief man of the island, as his father was sick. And you remember what happened? It was cold from the water. They got in there and they made some fire. And Paul reached over to get a bundle of sticks to help make the fire. He and Dr. Luke were there together. And a snake came out of that bundle of sticks and it fastened on his hand. And all those heathens said in the 28th chapter of Acts, if he were not possessed with a demon, he wouldn't have that serpent. Then when he shook the serpent off and they thought he would die, there wasn't even a puncture in his arm, they looked at him and said, he's a god, we'll worship him. And then every sick person on the island came and he healed every one of them. Everyone was healed, miraculously healed. And that's the last sign healing you have in the Bible. There's no more sign healing till the tribulation comes. You won't find another person healed. Right after that, you'll find a man by the name of Timothy. He was a very sick man. And the Apostle Paul wrote to Timothy, and he said, take no longer water for your stomach's sake, but take a little wine for your stomach's sake. Drink no longer water, but take a little wine for your stomach's sake. And for your off sicknesses. And that word sickness is the sickness that Lazarus had when he was dying. So he was a man who was sick, Timothy. Now Paul told Timothy 14 things to do. But he never told Timothy to baptize anybody. And he never told Timothy to heal anybody, because healing and baptism go together, and you can't drop one without dropping the other. And that's the reason our fundamentalists have no answer for Oral Roberts and the rest of the people in the healing today. When Norman Camp, with the publishing of that little book of A.E. Bishop's, found out that when you get the cure for healing, you have the cure for water baptism, he ordered that the book be destroyed and no longer sent out. You can't have the cure for one without the cure for the other. They go together. The last man that's ever baptized in the Bible is the 19th chapter of Acts. And right after he was baptized, Paul put hands on him and they spoke with tongues. And he cast out demons. Then he said to a dead man, get up. And so after he baptized the last time, he healed the sick and he raised the dead. And I have just as much right to go to a dead man down here at the Undertaker and put my hands on him and raise him to life as you have to put your hands on a man and put him in a baptistry for water. They go together. But you'll never find anybody miraculously healed after those heathen at Malta. But here's a man who did have his life prolonged. Listen. In the second chapter of Philippians, it says, the 25th verse, I suppose it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and companion in labor, and fellow soldier, but your messenger, and he that ministered to my wants. He longed after you all and was full of heaviness, because that he had heard that he had been sick. For indeed he was sick, nigh unto death. But God had mercy on Epaphroditus, and on him only, not on him only, but on me, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. Here was a man who was needed. And I want to tell you, my dear friends, if God needs you and all things work together for good and you're called according to his purpose, you'll never die one second before your time. That's the only person who can say all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to his purpose. God has a purpose today. And the one reason why God is prolonging the day of grace and extending the time before the Lord comes is to give every man and woman on this earth the opportunity to learn the truth of Ephesians 3:9. Make all men see what is the dispensation of the mystery, which from the beginning of the world hath been hid in God. With the revelation of the mystery, the full revelation, miraculous signs ceased, and there's never been one since that, except here and there, as God does what he did for Epaphroditus. Paul needed Epaphroditus, and God raised him up and prolonged his days and blessed him. The raising up of Hezekiah proved a curse, because Manasseh was the one that sinned and brought the great judgment and wrath of God upon the Jews that sent them down to Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar. And if Hezekiah's days had not been prolonged 15 years, Manasseh would have never been born, and the judgment of God would never have fallen upon the Jews. I learned a long time ago never to pray for something for myself. I don't know what's best for me. Wisdom comes from above. You ask God what's best for you. I was sick nigh unto death. I don't know how near, but I know that the doctors gave it up and said they couldn't do a thing for me. That was in 1932, and I went to Mayo Brothers. He said he couldn't do anything for me. I came back here, and I found out several hundred people were praying. A lady across the street said I had a condition like that. She mentioned a very simple remedy, nothing but lubricant. Inside of 6 days, after 16 months, everything cleared up. And I haven't been sick but 3 days from that day to this. But before I get home tomorrow, I may be gone. I don't know. But God has given me health and strength at my age 79, which I'll be in a few months, just as much as I had when I became here. Man came in here not long ago. He was about 20 pounds underweight. He was leaning over, and he had a cane, and he had about 4 teeth out. And he had less hair than I have, and it was awful gray. And he said, Brother O'Hare, I'd be with you if you just believed in healing. Look what the Lord's done for me. And I took one look at him and I said, is that all the Lord can do for you? Well, he said, you don't know how sick I was. Well, I said, look what he's done for me. He raised you from sickness, and he's kept me now for 24 years from getting sick. Well, that's good too, he said. Pentecostal neighbor came over a short time ago and said, I want you to come down and hear the testimony of a 72-year-old man, been marvelously healed. Oh, I said, I believe in that kind of healing that we have here taught in the life of Epaphroditus. Oh, this is marvelous. You ought to hear his testimony. Then we went on to talk about our church work, and he said something very sad happened in our assembly the other day. A little 9-year-old girl died. She was such a sweet little thing, and she was the daughter of one of our elders. I said, did you anoint her with oil? He said, yes. Did you take the promise, the prayer of faith shall save the sick? Yes. Did you pray? Yes. Well, he said, did God hear you? And he said, no, she died. Well, I said, will you explain something to me? Why did God heal the 72-year-old man and let the 9-year-old Christian girl go? Can you tell me that? No, well, I said, you and I believe in the same kind of divine healing. We believe in divine healing, but we do not believe in divine healers. I heard Oral Roberts over the air, over the television, when I was down to Evansville. And there was a woman who was afflicted, and she looked away from him a moment, and he said, look at me. I'm not so hard to look at, and if you don't look at me, you won't be healed. So I had to look at him, you know. And the other Sunday he says, I, my healing, I. You'll find this, my dear friends, when you say the Lord heals the sick, you'll find that all healing was done by the power of the Holy Spirit. By the power of the Holy Spirit. When Paul healed, he said it was by the power of the Holy Spirit. When the 12 apostles healed, it was by the power of the Holy Spirit. When Jesus Christ healed, he said, I cast out demons by the Holy Spirit.